Special Agent Watson, have the lamb stop screaming.
Yikes. I think they have. I don't know. Maybe not after watching this again, but.
Yeah, whatever lambs you had put to bed, they're awake and they're not silent anymore.
No, they're no longer silent.
No, they're happy and they're not happy and they're screaming. Or they're happy screaming. Who knows? We don't know. We've never been on a ranch in Montana.
No.
So we don't know. Hi, guys. I'm Special Agent Jesse Drew here with Special Agent Jeff Watson. How are you, Jeff?
I'm good. I'm excited to talk about this movie.
The movie we are talking about today, as we roll on with our blockbuster summer, is 1991's The Silence of the Lambs, directed by the wonderful, rest in peace, Jonathan Demme, and starring Jodie Foster, Anthony Hopkins. You guys know, because this is a classic. I'm just going to get the blockbuster info out of the way right away. The budget for this movie was 19 mil, which for 1991 money, that's pretty good. That's pretty good budget. I don't know that they were expecting. I don't think anybody can expect what happened with this movie to happen. It's just, I think it's like a matter of like movie fate. You know, it's like this movie was always destined to be what it became, but nobody could have predicted that when they were making it in like 1990 and back when they like acquired the rights and all that stuff. But okay, so for 19 mil. At the box office, it totaled $272.7 million, 1991 money. So that's like $400 trillion today.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And it became the fifth highest grossing film of 91 worldwide. And it became the third and last film. Not that another movie couldn't do it, but it's hard to take all the major Academy Awards, the five major: Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Director, Best Actress, and Best Screenplay. It won all of them. And, you know, that's not only, I mean, think about how many Academy Awards years there have been, and there's only been three films in total that have taken all five that have had that streak. And then add to it that this is considered a horror film. It's the only horror film that's ever, that's probably ever going to take it like that. You know, I think I think Get Out had the best chance of really sweeping and it didn't. Racist Academy Awards. What'd I say? listen, people, we're people of color. Okay. He's black, I'm Spanish, we're going to call it out. This is what it is, you know?
That's right.
But yeah, so Jonathan Demme, I want to go back to him because he's one of my most favorite directors. Jeff, have you seen any other of his movies that you know of?
I probably have, but I just don't know right off. So if you give me a couple, I'm pretty sure I have.
Well, he directed Something Wild, which was an 80s movie with Melanie Griffith and Jeff Daniels, like a young Jeff Daniels, and Ray Liotta, which is amazing. It's a lot of fun, and it's kind of two movies in one. I really think you should watch it. I think everybody should watch it. He's a really good director, so, and he adds a really It's always like there's like this lovely flavor in all of his movies, even in Silence. There's something like lovely about it. And I don't think it's just like the cinematography, as he worked with Tak Fujimoto a lot in his career. I don't think it's just a cinematography. I think it's something of his personality. He was a real sweetheart. And the reason I'm talking about him, like, you know, I kind of knew him, was that he actually had a big hand in my local art cinema, the Jacob Burns Film Theater. He was on the board, and he used to have these like showings of movies that he'd curate, you know, so it'd be like, you know, like, I don't know, like every Sunday afternoon or something like that. I don't remember, but, and they did a huge like memorial to him when he passed away. He lived really close to where I live. I just also grew up he directed the movie Married to the Mob.
Okay.
And when I was little, that movie was like my life, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer and Matthew Modine, I was just all over it. And then I just always heard about him, that he was a really kind soul. You know, I met Matthew Modine when I was in high school. He had nothing but nice things to say about Jonathan Demme. It was just, you know, just, I don't know. I hate when really super talented people get taken from us.
Yeah.
Plus like, but like they were good people. Cause we have like, I mean, we have a treasure trove, right, of like talented people who are, you know, D-I-C-K heads, you know,
yes,
and just total scum. But, you know, the ones that are actually like good people, you know, it's kind of hard, but we still have his work. And Silence, you know, along with like Philadelphia and, you know, some of the louder highlights, more bright, you know, the ones that went really mainstream. And this movie was
not
only I don't think they could have really have anticipated how huge it would become, but also, I mean, I don't know, it seems like an unlikely grouping. What do you think, Jeff? Like,
yeah, I mean, am I surprised that it has the cult following and is in the status that it's in after you watch the movie? No, but on paper it's like, you know, you kind of don't know what to expect and you don't know if it's going to work, honestly. So I remember the first time I saw this many years ago, I was just blown away and terrified. But, you know, upon watching it this time, I was blown away but at how masterful this was done, given the subject matter. So,
totally agree. There was something different watching it this time versus like the 19 or 20 other times I've seen this movie. As I've watched this movie a lot since I was young, this movie was one of the reasons I wanted to be an FBI agent for reals, like for reals, and. But yeah, when I was watching it, I have to jump. I'm gonna make a light speed jump to the end. That last scene, I think if anyone else had done it but him, I think that it could have come off kind of corny. Like, you know, Lecter's really making a phone call to Clarice, you know, to kind of like hint that he's gonna, you know, kill someone. Like, I don't know, like from a little island in the Caribbean, wherever they were, you know. But it. He pulls it off. They pull it off. It's everybody like does their part. And when the camera follows him, Dr. Lecter out of the little, like, you know, open air cafe that he's calling Clarice from, he puts on his hat. I mean, Anthony Hopkins deserved that award. He's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Just the way he puts on that hat is like, I'm like, I could only hope to put on a hat that cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right? Like, what's up? But yeah, he like puts on that hat and he just starts following Dr. Chilton anonymously, like in the crowd. And he knows what's going down. And Dr. Chilton is like the terrified mouse and he is the cat. And it's just the cinematography is not only beautiful, but it's like the camera, the fluidity of how it starts like pulling back so that you see how like he can blend in a crowd and no one will know that he's there.
Yeah.
And you don't know what's going to, I mean, you know what's going to happen, but you don't know how or when. And that's terrifying.
Yes.
That's clever. Like what you were saying, like you kind of like appreciate the little strokes of genius, like over and over again. I don't know. Did you have a moment this time when you watched it that kind of like, you were like, oh, wow.
This is probably not a scene that many people, maybe, I don't know. I don't want to say that. Maybe people do talk about it. I don't know. But you remember the scene where Clarice, and I forget her name.
Ordelia.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Are talking near the end and they're figuring it all out and piecing it together. And they're doing these tight shots on their faces. And it goes, you know, when Clarice speaks, it's on her. And then Ordelia, it goes on her. And just that, I don't know why that stood out to me so much, but just capturing that moment as if you're sitting there having that conversation and you can flip back and forth and be the other person in that moment was just so cool to me. So that really stood out to me. And then obviously the cinematography, the pacing of it, I think doesn't get enough credit because it's paced very well. And there's always something happening. You just have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Totally agree with you. That tension, tension of that conversation that they're having and how Ardelia is like, she gets it. Like mm-hmm. she's right there with Clarice, you know, she's like, I get it. I see what's going on too. Like, let's work it out. And Clarice is all like, you know, kind of like, you know, at one point she's like, you know, it's over or whatever. And she's just like, no, like, let's talk about it, you know? And then, like you said, the rhythm of going back and forth kind of adds to this like heightened tension, you know, right. And they're figuring it out and it's like right there. And she keeps saying, like, he said, everything I needed was right here in this file. And they like, can't grasp it. And I mean, Ardelia is a great unsung character. I feel like, I could have used more Ardelia. What do you think? I could have used.
Yeah.
Her.
Yeah. And I want to talk about something as we go forward, or maybe I can bring it up now. I don't know. But as a fan of this movie, I don't know if you checked out the CBS series Clarice.
I haven't. No, I haven't. I'm too scared.
Oh my God. Like it really dives deeper into both. And the primary focus is on Clarice, obviously, but you get a lot of Ordelia.
She's in it? Like, she's a character in it?
Yeah, like, it goes back to, you know, right after everything happened in this movie.
Oh, so they're already graduated.
Okay. Right, exactly. So they're already graduated, and then we go forward, and my goodness, it's a great show. From what I've heard, they canceled it, which sucks, but there's talk about bringing it back on Paramount Plus. So I'm hoping that's the case. But the show, like, if you're a fan of this movie, the show is just spectacular.
And almost just as well crafted?
Yes.
It doesn't feel like TV kind of meh.
Not to me.
Okay.
Like, no, I trust you. Every episode feels like a sequel. Like it feels like you're getting sequels to the movie. I mean, obviously there are different people playing those roles, but you know, I honestly, it's such a good show. And yeah, I mean,
I have to watch that. Okay. All right. If you're recommending, I trust.
Yeah. And I will say they don't hold out on the gore and stuff either, which I find very interesting. Like, it's not like over the top, mm-hmm. but I mean, you see stuff. I mean, it's, you know, it's there. So just a forewarning.
Okay. I've been forewarned, but I want to check it out. I was sort of like curious it looked cool, but I was like, you know what? I can't, because if it's not any good, I'm going to get angry. It's just, you know, I mean, look, we're movie fans. We're not, I mean, we're horror movie fans, but we're also like, you know, movie fans. Mm-hmm. And so these things upset us, you know, like, or satisfy us or make us happy, you know, like, so this is where we live, people. I'm not making any apologies. I'm just explaining. Cool. So I always felt like I would have loved to hear a little bit more about Ardelia. I understand the movie's got a lot. It's stuffed, you know,
right.
It doesn't feel stuffed, but it like one more half an inch and you'd be like, okay, that's enough. You know what I mean? Really enough. But I think all the characters are amazing. They're all well acted, and Anthony Held, I think it's Held or Held, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, the man who plays Dr. Chilton, who runs the Baltimore, you know, home for the criminally insane or whatever it is. He's so awesome. He is so, like, because he plays like gross and skeevy and annoying and like malintentioned so well,
yes.
You know, and I just every time I've seen this movie, Dr. Chilton gets to me and I get pissed off. You know, I get pissed off for Clarice, like for the way he treats her. I get pissed off for, you know, ruining the ruse that they're running, the scam that they're running. I get pissed that he's so like nasty and egocentric, but he's also like really interesting. It's so interesting how much of that character's ego plays into what goes down at that hospital. Even just the choices of how he speaks to the orderlies, like when he's laying on Hannibal's cot with Hannibal in like the, you know, whatever it's called, the like the mummy thing with the hockey mask on his face, and he's like, you know, they played you, like you totally got played. There's no deal for you. And he's like, and he doesn't address Barney the orderly as Barney. He just says, like, get out of here for a minute.
Yeah,
that's it. And I'm like, if you weren't like paying attention, you'd be like, wait, who did he just tell to get out of here for a minute? Was he talking to Hannibal or was he talking to Barney? Because he just, the way he says it is so dismissive. And then Hannibal like just like looks at Barney, you know, with this thing like smushed up against his face, you know, and he's just like, Barney, you know. And I just think that like, and Barney looks half terrified, half kind of like, I gotcha. Like, you know, well, I wanted to tell you before I forget, because I know I will forget. I was watching, okay, so I had gotten Silence on the Criterion Edition on Blu-ray like months and months ago, and I had yet to crack it open because there's just a million reasons, but I hadn't. So the opening went today, you know, and I watched it, and they have 38 minutes of deleted scenes. And I didn't get to watch all of it, but I watched a good amount. There are some really interesting scenes with Barney that like patches over some sort of like missing links there. Cause like we go from like them all being pissed off about this fake offer that was made, you know, by Jack Crawford and Clarice to like all this, like, you know, then, you know, the Tennessee, whatever bureau or whatever, the federal, who knows who takes over and they make the offer to him, and he goes to meet with Senator Martin, and she just like Clarice just shows up there. And you got to remember, like, you know, like, yeah, there she's at Quantico, she's at DC, but she's got to go out to Tennessee. I mean, I know it's not very far, but it's still a hike.
Right.
And she shows up and gets in to see Lecter. And she's got his drawings. And you just kind of, I mean, as an audience member, right, you piece it together in your head. Like, okay, well, she somehow got his drawings. She's FBI. She can get his drawings. Right. She got his drawings and, like, whatever. But what we see in the deleted scenes are, like, her talking with Jack Crawford being like, what do we do now? Like, you know, we're, like, SOL with this case, like, and we're off the case basically, but you know that like he's gonna mess around with them, but he was telling me the truth. What do we do? Like, how do we continue our investigation. And Jack Crawford's like, we can't go back to school. You're like a hair away from getting kicked out anyway. And thank you for your help. And she's like, no way. I got to talk to Lecter. I'm going to go talk to Lecter. You can't, but I can. And he tells her, bring him something and he'll talk to you. So the next scene is her like pulling up to the hospital, like just outside the hospital. Barney's in his car in like lay clothes, and he hands her like that tube of Lecter's drawings. And then she just takes off and goes. And then, you know, we see her and when she goes to see him in the cage. And like, I don't know. I was just like, I like seeing the deleted scenes just because I'm a nerd, but like, I'm sure you are. If I am, I'm sure you are. If not worse. But like, I like these interesting jumps. Like you get to see with Barney. I don't remember. I know there's a scene out there and I don't remember if it's like in some cut or if it's a deleted scene. I know there's a scene where, or maybe I'm just remembering the book because I've read the book a few times.
Okay.
But there's a scene where Lecter talks to Barney and he's like, you take care of yourself. And like Barney's like saying goodbye to him. And like when he's getting on the plane, no, this happened. I know I saw this with my eyes, with not my reading eyes, with my movie eyes. And he's like saying goodbye to him. And it's kind of emotional, like not too much, but a little bit. And I mean, this guy's been guarding Lecter for how long did he say he'd been in there? Like eight years. Yeah. So he's been guarding him for 8 years and like, you know, having to deal with Chilton, the both of them, you know? So he says like, you know, he's saying goodbye and he's like, you know, good luck, sir, whatever to Hannibal. And he's like, Barney, you've always been a gentleman and I will never forget it. And I'm like, boom, he's never going to come after Barney, but he's going to come after Chilton because Chilton was a jerk. Okay, so that's what happens when you're a jerk in life, people. Okay, you get bad things happen to you. I said it. My dad always says in Spanish, "Te diste cuenta?" And that's kind of like, see what happens, but like with like a little like, told you. That's the inflection. Like that's what he told you. Like there was one time where it's like, this lady had kind of done him wrong, you know? And she got married to some other dude instead of my dad. And the guy, like, whatever, I think he got sick, you know, and he passed away. I mean, my dad had no beef with the guy. He didn't know him, you know.
Right.
But my dad told me this story. And he's like, ¿Daddy te cuenta? And I'm like, Daddy? that they passed away because the woman jilted you? Like, that's crazy. What are you
that's,
talking?
That's
he was like, I'm just saying. He was like, I didn't say that. I'm just saying. I was like, what?
Hey.
So I'm like, I know. I kind of, my dad's real funny like that. But yeah, I was just kind of thinking like, it's weird. And it got me thinking about, I want to ask you something. You know how when she finds the severed head at the yourself storage, right?
Yes.
And she like races over to see Hannibal to talk to him. And there's the TV set there with like the televangelist, like, you know, and he's like, oh, you know, Dr. Chilton gets his kicks. When you leave, this will be turned up to like full volume just to try to bother me. And I mean, so much in this movie is significant. You know, I feel like, cause I was thinking about how, like, he gives his sort of absolution to Clarice and to Barney. I mean, you don't see it in this, you know, in the regular cut of the movie, but he does. It's kind of like saying like, don't worry, I'm not going to come after you with all my wrath and, you know, with all the evil and stuff. But it's kind of like, that almost sounds like, it almost sounds like a godlike decision or a godlike, you know, figure to say like, I'm going to let you live. Mm-hmm. You're not going to die. Like, I'm going to let you live. I'm not going to kill you. That's kind of like a God thing, but he wields as much power on Earth. But really, if you, I mean, but then if you think about what he did to those cops in Memphis that he killed, he like flayed one and had him strung up like an angel. But yeah. I mean, that's pure evil what he did. So it's like, what is it? I mean, it's easy to say, duh, he's just evil. And yeah, he is evil, duh. But like the higher question is like, but what is it that like the movie gives him such grace? The book describes him and stuff, and he's interesting for sure. He's super genius and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But like to depict it on screen is something else. And the movie gives and Anthony Hopkins gives like Hannibal Lecter like this real grace about him.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about his character in general? And like, I mean, it's just, it's so nuanced, but I'm like really curious about like what you think about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy because even hearing him say that Chilton would turn it up just to annoy him, it's almost as if he feels like he's in competition with God. You know, like he has his mission, he has his things that he does, and it's counter to what, you know, typically happens, especially for people of faith. I think more than anything, he kind of sees himself as judge, jury, and executioner for a lot of people. And I think that's the vibe that I got, because, you know, ultimately, if he deems you worthy of his wrath, or, you know, and the unfortunate person that will deal with it, he's not only judging you, he's carrying out your sentence, you know, and deciding that, but he's also, in a lot of cases, the person that's going to end it all for you. So that's kind of how I see it. I see it as like saying it's evil is too easy, in my opinion.
Yes, that's what I meant before. You know, like, yeah, like it's obvious it's evil, but what else is it?
Yeah, it's almost like the way he carries himself is almost regal. So, you know, you kind of get those vibes too, where he feels like he's on this throne of, you know, power, and he has the ability at any moment to just, you know, unleash his power, whether that's mind games with people, whether that's, you know, the thing, what was his name?
Miggs.
Yeah. The thing with Miggs. It's like, yeah, you know, crazy. That was crazy. So it's like he has all of this power and he can just wield it whenever, and people can't stop him. I mean, even with Clarice, I came to the point, and I wanted to ask you this too. Do you feel like she kind of, it was more than her just trying to solve a case? Like, and do you think, you know, where do you think of their relationship? Because I feel like she kind of took the bait too. I mean, it was a mutually beneficial relationship, but do you think there was more there for her?
Like in terms of her relationship with him or just in
general? With him.
I mean, with him, they had a really interesting relationship that I kind of tried to pay more attention to, like closer this time. Mm-hmm. And like, I thought some of the funnier parts of the movie actually were when, you know, like the one part that like, you know, makes me giggle like every single time is when he says to her, like when she's like, no, I came like on my own because I wanted to. And he's like, people will say we're in love, you know, like,
yeah.
And I think that's hysterical. Yeah. And I think like that part gets to the heart of their relationship. It's like this odd kind of friendship where you can goof with someone in the middle of like a crisis, you know, like she's there because it's a crisis and she knows that he was being honest and he can really help, you know, where, and like, he knows that, like, I was trying to think like, what is he getting from her? Like, why is he so desperate to know about her? But I'm like, you know, that is his nature. He's talking about like what's Buffalo Bill's nature. Like that's his nature. Like he is a he was a psychiatrist and a very successful one, right. You know, for so long. He likes to get to know people and their inner demons. Like that's what gives him purpose, you know, besides, you know, killing, you know. And I think that he's so brainy that that is like his purpose. Like he can't separate both. Like it's got to be both. So I think that's what she provided to him, was kind of a chance to be like a human being again and serve his purpose. Now that I'm like just kind of talking it out. But like you said, I think it's like it, their friendship or they're like, what is it called? Like the uneasy alliance. And for those of you who are not watching the YouTube channel, I'm doing air quotes. But like that uneasy alliance between the two of them, I mean, he gets in trouble because she comes around. She gets in trouble because she doesn't get what she needs to get from him in totality. You know, it's like they're both kind of getting in trouble for each other. They're both kind of know that the other one is holding something they really want, you know, but they're trying to make it last as long as possible because they know that they can't really have a real friendship. So this is going to be over like sooner than later. So I think that it's, I think it's kind of that. I think it's like they have this like undefinable friendship because who like really, because you see her get like, you see her kind of cop an attitude with him at times. Like she, when she's making the offer to him, she's like, you know, take it or leave it. Like toots, you know, and like, who's going to talk to him like that? But she like kind of doesn't ever forget that he's a killer. You know, she doesn't ever forget that, like this man has like, you know, a body count on his back, you know, like, and he can't help but take digs at her. Like how people like take digs at like the cops. You know, like criminals don't like the police. They don't like law enforcement, you know, so they'll take digs at them. Like he's always making fun of her shoes. What the hell is that about? You know what I mean? Like it's him making fun of a cop, you know, like, and teasing her that she's like you said, he was kind of carries himself like royalty, you know? Well, she's kind of like a peasant to him at first. You know, and so they have this weird, like, it's like they're working out. Like each of them is like working out a bunch of problems that they have with society in general on each other, you know? Yeah. And they know that the other one has like a key, you know, that they each need. So I think their friendship, I call it a friendship, you know, even though I don't think Clarice would ever consider like any murderer or any criminal her friend. But, you know, they're friends. Like, you know, she brought him the drawings. Like Jack Crawford didn't tell her, go get his drawings because they're really precious to him. So obviously they'll have sentimental value. She knew to go get he just said, and he even suggested, he was like, you know, I brought so like a fake name of a killer once, like I brought him a big tub of my wife's banana pudding. And he talked to me all night. So bring Hannibal something. She could have brought him, she could have stopped and gotten some, you know, Cozy Shack rice pudding, but she brought him his drawings. She got Barney to come, you know, it's like the whole thing. It's like, so even though she's doing it like as like a trick or whatever, or as like a ploy, she's still doing it.
Still doing it.
She's still doing it. She's getting her friend his drawings. So you're done, Clarice. You're done.
Yep.
Your best friend is a serial killer, Clarice. But he plays Anthony Hopkins. I don't like the whole romanticizing of serial killers, but as a fictional character, I think it's okay to go there. He plays a really cool person, like in this movie.
He does.
Like, you know, he's really good. Have you ever seen the hell is it? Oh, Manhunter.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Brian Cox's performance as Hannibal Lecter. I'll give you my thoughts on it in a minute, but what's your take on Brian Cox's Hannibal Lecter? So I think it's fair to talk about it. Like,
yeah. You know. I thought it was good, honestly. Like I mean, I really I never thought that anyone else could do that like Anthony Hopkins. And I mean, he played it very well. I mean, the show was incredible, but he played it incredibly well.
I thought the same thing. It's like, you know, I had never seen Manhunter. You know, what was that movie, like 84, 86, something like that? You know, that was, I mean, I was really small then, you know what I mean? So, yeah. You know, and then having seen Silence a million times, I finally got to seeing Manhunter, and I thought the same thing. I was like, let's see how this guy does it. I mean, I know Brian Cox from like a million other movies, but like, I thought, Jeff, for a while, I really thought that he played the better Hannibal. I really did. That was my opinion for a while after I saw Manhunter. I was like, wow, he should have gotten an award too, because
he should have.
For shame, because he did a really excellent job. He brought out that character in a totally different way, but in like a really smooth and scary way. Because the thing is that with Anthony Hopkins is that I feel like for me, and maybe for you, I don't know, but you tell me, I kind of have to keep reminding myself that he's like a scary person, you know, like he's scary smart, but we only get one scene where he's being like, where he's doing what he does best. You know what I mean? Where he's killing people. Yeah. And so we don't have, you just have your own imagination to bank on to know how scary he is. But I just feel like it's not a scary performance through and through. It's chilling, but it's not scary. And even when he's murdering those two officers that are like guarding him, it's like not necessarily scary. It's like almost elegant, which I know they did that on purpose, but it's like, it's kind of wild. It's like the aftermath, I think, was like scarier. So yeah. It was the aftermath. But like, I don't know. What do you think? Like, what are you thinking?
I thought it was a very chilling and disturbing performance. And, you know, going back to the scene where, you know, he does what he does to the police. Even when he's using the whatever baton or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
The way he's swinging it. And I got this thought. It's almost as if it's a conductor.
I knew you were going to say that.
There you go. It's like,
I'm like, you're going to say it.
Yeah. Like it's almost as if he's a conductor and there's a rhythm to the strikes. And it's that for me, it's like, he's done this so many times that he's worked it out to an art form to him. Like it's his art form. Yeah. So yeah, it was, I'm glad that you picked up that I was going to say
conductor. I knew it because I thought of it too. And I was like, he's going to say it. He's going for it.
I went for it.
Yes. I mean, you know, I feel like we could go on and on and on about this movie because it gives so much. This is a movie that really gives a lot to its audience. And it doesn't treat you like you're dumb and you're not going to pick up on things, but it also doesn't make things so like blindingly esoteric that you're like, wait, what? You know, like I have to watch that one part like five times to understand what just happened, you know?
Right.
The perfect piece, I think the piece that showcases what a master Jonathan Demme and his whole team, you know, were on this film is how they do the trick ending without having it feel like it was like a trick ending. Like it's not like M. Night Shyamalan like trick endings, but it is a trick ending that you get. Right. And spoiler alert, you know, but come on, this movie is like how old? Oh, it's 30 years old now. We're on its 30th anniversary. So if you're a horror fan and you haven't seen Silence of the Lambs, stop what you're doing. My God.
go fire up your
Blu-ray player or your DVD player.
That needs to be the next movie that you watch.
Yes, period. Please.
If you have.
Yeah. I just, I can't even, if you haven't seen it, If you haven't seen it, get fired. Because you can't. All right. So what was I saying?
You were talking about how they pulled the trick ending, but it didn't feel like.
Right. It doesn't make. End. Yeah. It doesn't make. It makes you feel like satisfied and scared, which is, I think, two things that are hard to come by.
Yes.
Simultaneously, but you feel scared. Like, I felt legit scared. This movie, I can't keep stressing how many times I've seen this movie, like, in its totality and its entirety, of like so many times. And I paused it to go use the bathroom. I come out of the bathroom and my son is standing like outside the door, and I jumped so hard and I got really mad. Like, you know when you get like spooked and you get pissed?
Yeah.
Like, I got really pissed. And I was like, what are you doing standing there? You're, you know, don't ever do that again.
Yeah, don't do that.
No, and like my husband was like, you know, not just outside the door, but like kind of like on the edge, and he was like blowing bubbles. And I'm like, what the hell are you guys doing? And they were like trying to like surprise me, not scare me. But I'm like in the middle of watching this movie for like the 26th time, but I'm like, I didn't even realize I was on edge. But when I just, and that's my son. I mean, I love him more than life. And you know, standing right there, he wasn't doing anything freaky. He was just standing,
there.
And I just jumped and was like, ah! Like, what are you crazy? Are you trying to kill me? I think I said, are you trying to kill me?
I've got to ask you this, though, because we haven't talked about it yet. Oh. And I want to talk about it. No. Tell me what you thought about the performance of the character of Buffalo Bill.
Oh, man. You went there.
I went there.
Buffalo Bill, the actor who plays him, I read an interview with him really early this morning or really late last night. I don't remember. I'm sorry. I'm just like pausing because it has taken me like years that today when I watched the film today, and I have always, since 2008, I have had to fast forward through the big scenes with Buffalo Bill, with Ted Levine, the mm-hmm. actor is Ted Levine. I have seen him pop up in other movies that I've seen and had to stop the movie and can't watch the movie. Anybody that even sounds like him with his voice, because he's got a distinct voice, you know, like I've had to, nope, can't do it. That song that plays, it's called Goodbye Horses by Q Lazarus, mm-hmm. when he's doing his dance,
yeah,
is a no-go, is like a no-fly zone. It's on a few of Jonathan Demme's soundtracks because I think he was friends with the band, so he always mm-hmm. stuck that song in his movies, and it's like a no-fly zone. But he did an amazing job. I mean, to scare someone, that's a fictional character, and to scare someone like me, I'm sure I'm not the only one who's had an adverse reaction to his character in the movie. You've got to be really dedicated. And what I read about him and him doing this character was that his audition was really terrifying, and that's why they hired him. And that he went and like talked to John Douglas, who is like the, you know, criminal profiler and at the FBI. He just like really got into it full, like 360 degrees, you know, like everything. Yeah. He was the one who wanted that dancing scene in the film and fought for it because it wasn't in the screenplay. And he just felt like it really would showcase what this killer was about in a way right. that nothing else in the movie really had. And so I was like, wow, you've really got to be dedicated to your craft. I give him a lot of respect. I can't even with him. Today was the first time since 2008 yeah. that I have been able to watch the movie in its like without fast forwarding through his scenes, where he, you know, he abducts Catherine and when he is dancing in that room. I was, it's just too much. I had a nightmare. I just remember this. I had a nightmare in 2008. The next day, it was so bad that the next day I was still crying and shaking. I went to work and I was like, you know, in good health then, like good mental health and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I was, you know, still a sensitive person, you know, yeah. And I just, the whole day, I couldn't shake it. I mean, it's 8 hours, you know, after the fact, and I just still couldn't shake it. And I was like, I can't ever, I was like, oh my God, what if I can never watch that movie again? I was like, you know, maybe whatever, don't even worry about it now. And it worked out, you know?
Yeah.
So what about you? What did you think of, because that's a, he didn't, I don't know. He was, as they, I hate when people say this, but I think he really was a revelation. Like, yeah, people say like, oh, they're a revelation.
It's a
like,
revelation.
I hate that so much. But yo, Ted Levine, you are a revelation. Okay. Because that, you did that amazing. Oh, I feel like I was watching a for real serial killer and what it's like, you know, like to be like a fly on the wall when they're doing their gross things. What did you think?
Yeah, that's, it's one of the most disturbing performances. And you get a couple in here.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most disturbing performances I've ever seen in a film. And that's saying a lot because it's a character that sticks with you, unfortunately. It's also, it's an iconic character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's because of how dedicated Ted Levine was to it, like you said, all the things you mentioned. But for me, it's just, it's so terrifying seeing him in action. Mm. You know, seeing him, like even the scenes where he's sewing and there's nothing else going on, that's terrifying. Hearing his voice, terrifying. The end, near the end, where Clarice comes to his house and you figure out that, I mean, you figure out that, hey, she's going into the lion's den. Everyone else is in the wrong place. That was done. You know, that was
perfect. That was the twist, you know,
that was it, you know, and it's like, okay, this is going to get terrifying. And one of the scariest scenes that I've, for me anyway, and I watch a lot of messed up crap, but one of the scariest scenes for me is when Clarice is in that room after she's passed through and he's using the night vision and she has no idea where he is and you get those glimpses of him using it. It's just terrifying.
It's a, they knew in making that movie, it doesn't have to be anything like anything more complicated than just your fear of the dark.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. She can, you know, she's feeling, she's grasping the wall behind her. She doesn't know what's in front of her. She's blinded with the darkness and he is right there. Her worst fear is literally standing right in front of her. She right doesn't know. And that, what's more simple and yet more like primal and fearful than that? You know what I mean? Like that's playing hide and go seek in the dark. That's it's, and it's terrifying. You know, mm-hmm. I can't even play hide and go seek even as a child. I used to get really scared. I'd always get a knot in my stomach. So I didn't like it. Yeah. I was like, I like give myself up because I'd be like, oh, I can't take this anymore.
I'm done.
Yeah, like that's why. Well, I didn't really like to play, and that's one of the reasons. Playing always gave me knots in my stomach. It's like, you know, why does everything have to be so scary? Like, but that's because it's like, you know, your primal, your subconscious, your primal urges. You know, what is, like I said, what's more terrifying than, you can't see what's in front of you.
Right.
And you know the monster is there. You know he's there somewhere because he, you know, he's the one who pulled the, you know, like, you know, hit the switch so that all the lights went out. Yo, but when she went into that room before the lights go out, and she went into that room and that decaying woman in the bathtub. Oh my God. That was like another hit, like on the, it doesn't need to be complicated to be like terrifying hit.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that was enough. I never even caught that scene until so many years ago. Cause it's like the quality, it's like, it's so dark in that room.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes, and if you're like, if you like turn around to get your, you know, to get your glass of water or whatever, or if you, you know, put your face into your popcorn bag, like you miss it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But after I realized what the hell was going on, I just was like, oh my God. And you see her hand shaking, pobrecita, poor thing. She's her hand is shaking with the gun, and like you're seeing it in the green light, you know, and oh my God, it's too much.
It's another one of those where it doesn't have to be like over the top gore fest, but if placed correctly.
Uh-huh. Right when she goes down into the hell dungeon, she sees the disgusting porquerias of the woman in the tub. Oh my God. It's like she's not there for, you know, for an hour. He doesn't lock her in that room. It's just she sees it, and then any like semblance of like, you know, self-control starts going right out the window. She's just trying her best. I mean, she is the bravest person in the FBI. I think that Jack Crawford would have been like, he would have like pushed himself as hard as she did to keep going, to try to save Catherine and to try to nail, you know, I don't think anybody else, not a single person. And I think that's a quality that Hannibal sees in her. She really is trying. She's trying so hard. She wants it so badly. She wants to, like, you know, do this noble job that her father, you know, did. And he's a cop, you know, and he gets that sense from her. I think that's why he likes her so much. And I think with Barney is like the same thing. He kind of he can sense that, like, he's just this dude who's not judging on him. He's like, let God judge him. Like, I just need to take care of him. I need to make sure he's all right, you know? And I wanted to say, bring up two things. One is, I love how much Jonathan Demme really brought, like, he really brought a respect and, a practicality to the movie, to Clarice's story, to like how Jodie Foster, you know, kind of revealed Clarice throughout the movie in a, such a way that you like kind of had like no doubt, like, yeah, of course, like she's in the FBI. She's so brave and she's so smart and she's clever and she's earnest too, which makes her special. And she, but it's like as a female at that time, that's like, that was a really big deal. It's still a big deal today, you know. Law enforcement is still by and large a boys club, especially, you know, federal government. And I think at that time it was so special that he was able to really bring that out. There's so many, like, there's like a few hints, right, that we get about her like love life or whatever. But he doesn't let it go there. Like, he brings it up because, of course, she's Jodie Foster. She's gorgeous and she's super smart. And, of course, you know, men around her would, you know, make comments or be attracted to her. But he doesn't, like, let the story go there at all. You know, he's just like, nope. And when he does with the two bug doctors, like with the guy who asks her out for cheeseburgers and beer, like, it's very charming. And you see that she's, like, he's not being disrespectful, and she kind of likes him too, so it's kind of cute. But that doesn't, you don't see anything else about it. Like, the story is, that's how a man would be treated in this story, you know. And that's, I think that's so special. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was, apparently at that time, and both of us were so little that we wouldn't have, you know, kind of been aware, but like, the, what we now know as the LGBTQ community, back then, I'm not sure what it was called, maybe just, you know, the gay community, I'm not sure. They were very upset about the portrayal of someone who is trans, and how Ted Levine and how Jonathan Demme, more broadly, like, you know, made their serial killer, their really twisted serial killer, a trans person. And the people on the movie, you know, fought hard back against it, just saying like, listen, we've got nothing but respect for the trans community, but it's not about him being a trans. In fact, it's even stated in the movie, you know, Lecter says like, he thinks he wants to be a woman. He thinks he wants to be a transsexual. That's what they used to say instead of transgendered. But he's not that at all. And she says, and Clarice says, I know, like I've read up on it. They're not violent people. You know, right. Lecter's like, no, he just wants to get away from what he is. He wants to believe he's transsexual, but he's not. And what do you think about all of that? Because I mean, we're even in the 90s, people made noise. You know, obviously every community is going to make noise for if they think their community is being disrespected. Right. But even through now, did this movie inform you at all when you watched it, which I'm guessing you watched it kind of on the young side? Because I know I did.
Yeah.
Did it inform your thinking about trans people or sort of like, you know, people whose gender identity or sexual identity was different from yours? And like, what do you think about this movie and like placing it in today's context?
For me, it made me ask questions, especially when I got older and watched it again. It made me ask questions. In terms of, you know, like all the backlash that they received, I felt like they were very respectful in the film. However, I'm a heterosexual male. It doesn't matter what my opinion is about how it made someone in the trans community feel. So for me, it's like if I had a friend, which I do, and I may actually ask this question, who is trans? Say, how did this movie make you feel? If you've watched it, how did this portrayal make you feel? I thought with some of the dialogue and things that were said, I feel intentionally, I thought that the actors, the director, they were being very respectful to not ascribe a certain set of behaviors to a certain population. Because, I mean, honestly, the 90s were rough when it came, and, you know, 80s too, even still tough. But especially then, you know, it was tough for, you know, people who were, you know, non-binary, who, you know, weren't gender conforming. Honestly, you know, like even then they couldn't be those things because it had to be created, you know, and people, it took such a long time to embrace that we're all human beings and, people should have the ability to live their life as they see, you know, fit. So I thought that they were respectful. How it would play today, that is a really good question. Because I don't know. I think there would still be backlash, honestly. I think that they would have to do something a little bit different with the character. I hope we never have to have this conversation because I hope this movie has never gone through the recycle bin.
No, I don't think it ever will.
I hope not. But, you know, I think it would be, I think if someone were to do it, they'd have to go to people like, you know, leaders of the community and say, okay, we're bringing this back. This is the direction that we want to go. How do we best respect your community, but at the same time tell the story? So, for me, it, like I said, it created a lot of questions, but I thought that, you know, generally they were respectful intentional about saying certain things. What about you?
This movie actually did reinforce some like negative feelings. Mm-hmm. Again, not that it matters. I'm a straight, you know, hetero woman, but it did. It had me spooked about transgender people. So I can kind of see, like, you know, what the argument is. I don't think that. I think that it's kind of one of those things where it just keeps going in circles, like around and around, because I get the argument about, like, it's a portrayal and a mainstream blockbuster movie of a person who is transgendered. And that screen time is going to influence what a lot of people think that lifestyle is like. And so they're not wrong about that.
Right. You
know? They're not wrong about that. But it goes back to, yeah, but if you're watching the movie, you understand, because the other characters so clearly say that this person isn't actually a transsexual, you know, to use 1991's mm-hmm. words. They're not actually trans, that they're a serial killer who is adopting the identity of a trans person to make, you know, to kind of make sense of these, you know, monstrous urges. And then that goes right back to, like, exactly, you're showing on the big screen mm-hmm. this, you know, dynamic actor who is portraying a trans person, serial killer. And that's not right. So it kind of goes in this endless loop. And all yeah. I know is that it definitely did reinforce some scary feelings, you know, about people who dressed as the opposite gender. And that really didn't go away entirely until I actually met and befriended people who were trans. And I was like, there's nothing scary about this at all. They're
right.
just a human being. Like, what, you know, but I had had those unfortunately I had had those ideas. I was never like, you know, I was little, so I wasn't like, you know, rude about it to anybody. And even as, right. you know, even as an adult, like, you don't like make it into a hostile thing. It just kind of scared me, honestly. And like, I would always I'm the living embodiment of why they have a solid argument. I would think of the Silence of the Lambs, you know what I mean? And other things I've seen yeah. that are freaky that involve trans people. And so then, you know, that kind of feeds into itself. And then when a couple of trans people have befriended me, I should say, that totally went away, and I totally don't have that issue anymore. I mean, that's what they say, like, exposure is so important. You know what yeah. I mean? Like, with, like, you know, studies of racism and, you know, gender inequality and stuff. It's like, it's so much about being exposed to people that are different from you. And like, I'll own up always to, you know, not being a perfect person, mm-hmm. you know, and that was definitely one of the things I was not perfect about. You know, but I learned, and I, you know, that's what we're here to do.
Exactly.
So I think that's kind of an open-ended question. And like you, I hope to God this, I don't see how anyone would ever approve for this movie to be remade. If you guys out there have any ideas on that or thoughts about that, like a reboot on Silence of the Lambs, send us an email to moviestobemurderedby@gmail.com. Or leave a comment underneath our YouTube page. I just can't. I don't think it won 5 Academy Awards and BAFTAs. Like, I don't think anyone's yeah. going to need to remake this. They're making plenty of money still, like, off of, you know, each edition that comes out. It got swallowed up into the Criterion Collection. You know, I mean, this movie is still a moneymaker.
Right.
All in all, Jeff, Special Agent Watson, I should say, how many headstones are you giving this tasty little Silence of the Lambs? And would you get a tattoo of anything about this movie or the ink test? Was, you know, would you get a tattoo?
So Headstones, that's easy. 5. It's a classic. The ink test is tricky because to me, this is a very, I mean, and to a lot of people, this is a very disturbing movie. And the subject matter doesn't make it where it's like, I really want to have this on my body forever. So I would probably say no. Although the Hannibal, the mask is one of those masks where it's like, okay, you know, as a horror fan, if you're looking, you know, if you're a mask person, you're like, okay, well, that's kind of, you know, that's scary, it's creepy, that kind of thing. But yeah, I don't think I would. So yeah, so Headstones and ink test for you.
I think you should get, like, you know, like when he's in the whole getup and strapped to that board and he's got that, like, but he's got like the kind of fuller hockey mask face, right? I think you should get that, except have it be your, like, head. Like, is that, do you know what I mean? You should get yourself, like, that would be awesome. It's a good one. It's a good idea.
That's a good idea.
I would also give it 5 headstones. No, like, you know, just easy. It's a perfect movie. This movie's perfect. Mm-hmm. Literally, mm-hmm. Everything about it is perfect. And would I get a tattoo of some imagery of the movie? I mean, like you said, it's a really dark movie. I mean, we were talking a little bit before the show about this, how it's got an intensity that just doesn't let up. You get a few cracks of humor, like with the bug guys, but that's like how far into the movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or when she's in the elevator, like at the beginning with all the guys in the red shirts and she's so short and they're all so tall. Like that's kind of, that's funny, you know, but this movie is not let up. So I don't know that I need, like, look, I've already got that intensity, like in my blood. I know you do too. I don't know. I mean, that the drawing that he does of her, that Hannibal Lecter does of Clarice, where she looks so beautiful and she's holding, she looks almost like the Virgin Mary, you know, and she's holding the little lamb in her arms. That's such a, it's really tender drawing that he does of her. And if I were a braver person, maybe I'd get that, but I'm just not. I just can't. I have too many things running in my head already. I don't need it on my body. Yeah, see, I know you're the same. You know, you don't need it. Yeah, eye to eye. That's why we're brother and sister, brother. You get it now? Yeah, so no, I'm going to say no. I know I've seen a lot of people get the Death's Head moth tattooed. Mm-hmm. I follow like a bazillion tattoo shops all over the world on my Instagram, on my personal Instagram page. And it's like the Death's Head moth is like never, it just doesn't, it's like the snake. People just are fascinated with those two images and they get them tattooed all the time. And I'm like, geez, like really? Like that's intense, you know? Like what are you calling on death for? You know what I mean? Or what are you calling on the serpent for? It's,
exactly.
What's that about? So you heard it here first, people. We are not actually, we're horror movie people who are not down with tattoos that are too dark. We like to keep it moving. Right? Yeah. To, you know, interesting, intense, sure, but doesn't need to be dark. Mm-hmm. We don't need to summon Satan. We're not about that. We're not about that life.
Not at all.
So people, please, we are begging you, your two friendly neighborhood movie special agents, Jesse Drew and Jeff Watson, are imploring you, if you haven't seen Silence of the Lambs, to please watch it. If you have seen it, watch it again. Watch it again. You like movies out there, people? You like movies? All right. We'll believe you when we've heard that you've watched this again. Mm-hmm. Because this movie is incredible and needs to be, if you're a movie lover, this needs to be in your lexicon. This should be something that you could just like drop references about like crazy.
Yeah.
So
that's it.
Yep, that's it. And we will see you next week when Summer Blockbuster Month wraps up with Wes Craven's Scream. Boing. Yep, we're doing Scream, people. Get ready. Get your masks ready.
Get your
goofballs. This movie was no goofballs. That movie's full of goofballs. So we're going to be back home on our home planet of Planet Goofball.
Yes, and I will tell the story of how I went to a dance dressed as Ghostface.
I can't wait to hear that. And I will tell no stories of the kind because I never did anything that funny. So, all right, people. Thank you for listening so much. I know we ran a little late, but we appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. Have fun. Movies always. Peace.
Peace out.
Game over.